That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy, live on FUBAR Radio, here to simply, how do I put this, make you better with money. I say it every single week, and I don't think I've been proven you're wrong just yet. If you would like to prove me wrong, feel free to DM us on at That Money Show on Instagram, but I know that none of you will, because every single week we consistently make you better with money. How, I hear you ask? Well, we do it in several ways. Number one, the news. Not the boring stuff, the stuff that you actually should know. The stuff that will make you sound smart when you start talking to your friends. And the stuff that will actually impact what you need to be doing with your money right now, because the news is telling you to do so. And then number two, we always bring in the coolest guests, the coolest experts, the most broad range of people within the world of money or outside the world of money to discuss all things possible. And who do we have coming on this week, I hear you ask? Well, number one, we've got Andy Donald, the communications director at UK Finance. UK Finance, could we have a better company name for someone to interview on That Money Show? I don't think so. And secondly, Laura Schmidt, the founder of Love and Do. Not going to give you any more than that, because you're going to have to stick around to actually listen to that interview in roughly 30 minutes. Give or take. My timings might be horribly off, and if she's on in about 5 minutes, I apologise. She's not. About 30 minutes or so. And then, of course, we always give you some good tips, some practical things that you can take with both hands and actually implement the second this show is over to improve your finances. Sound like a deal? Should we kick off? Yeah, let's do it. All right, what is going on in the news? Well, LISAs. Have you ever heard that word before? Lifetime ISAs, I'll expand it. Or I can expand it even more. Lifetime Individual Saving Accounts. That's fully what a LISA stands for. What are they and what is happening with them? Well, a lifetime ISA is a tool, a really good tool to help you save, mainly towards a first-time property. But there's an issue with them. So I suppose to tell you what the issue is with them, I should probably start by telling you how they work. Essentially, everyone in the UK aged between 18 and 39 has a £4,000 per year allowance to put into lifetime ISAs. You might have heard of ISAs, where you have a £20,000 allowance over across all different types of ISAs. A lifetime ISA is one of them, and in that one you can put in up to £4,000 per year. Now, what's so cool about them? Well, the government will quite literally add on 25% of whatever you put into those accounts. Pretty crazy, right? So if you're putting in 4,000, that's an extra £1,000 into that account from the government, bringing you up to £5,000 in that account, okay? Sounds like a pretty sweet deal. And it is. Of course, you can then go and either choose to invest that money or to save it and get a specific interest rate. And that's essentially the context. The thing is, you have to use that money on either a first-time property that is worth under £450,000. That obviously is for yourself. So if you've ever bought something, buy to let, etc., you no longer qualify for that. Or alternatively, you can use it for retirement. So you can access it once you are 60 years old. All right, everyone now, you got it? You clear on what a lifetime ISA does? Good. So what's the issue with them? Well, the issue is if you choose to withdraw the money and not use it for either of the reasons I just told you, so retirement when you're 60 or for a first-time property. So let's say you end up needing a first-time property that's £451,000 and therefore you can't use your lifetime ISA, but you'd still like to withdraw that money to use on the deposit, well, you get a penalty. So you can't just withdraw the money and lose the bonus. You actually get penalised 25% of whatever is kind of been contributed or whatever's in the account, okay? So what I mean by that is, let's take again, you're going to bear with me for a second, everyone, yeah? Let's do some quick maths. You've put in £4,000, okay? The government have added on their 25% bonus, £1,000. You're now up to £5,000 in that account. You now realise you're not going to use that money for either of the two reasons, so you have to take it out. Assuming, a lot of people would assume, that the 25% reduction would just remove that £1,000 the government gave you. You would be wrong, and your math teachers would be frowning at you right now, okay? Because 25% of the larger amount now, £5,000, mean you now owe the government 1,200 £250. That's right. You have to actually pay them back an extra £250 from your original £4,000 contribution. Okay? So that's a penalty. That's what would have to happen. And what's been going on? Well, there's been some research into some of the penalties that people in the UK have had to be paying. And it turns out there have been penalties as high as £11,000 for lifetime ISA withdrawals. Someone is having to pay back £11,000 of their own money, not of the bonus money, of their own money back to the government for withdrawing it for neither of the two correct reasons. Blowing my mind. That is absolutely disgraceful. And the reason I'm so angry right now is because I have my money in a lifetime ISA and I am trying to buy a first-time property and I'm finding it. I live in London where the average property price is now around £550,000. You do the maths. Very unlikely that I'm going to be using my lifetime ISA at the moment. I'm going to have to pay a penalty. It's not quite going to be 11 grand. But it's still, you know, money is money. No one can't, beggars can't be choosers in this current, you know, economy. So there's a penalty you paid, which is why I'm so passionate about this. But let's take a look at some of the stats, okay? So around last year, I mean, not actually last year, between 2022 and 2023, some 74,000 people were hit by lifetime ISA penalties, meaning that they had to withdraw their money and not use it for the first-time property under 450k or for retirement. Of those 74,000 people, 15,977 were forced to hand back over £1,000 or more in penalties, okay? So over a grand in penalties. 6,139 had penalties of over £2,000. And here's the scary part. 851 people were fined over £5,000. That's like they've probably been saving towards a property for over 20 years. And all of a sudden they have to give away that lifetime ISA. You know, not just the bonus they've been given, but an extra bit on top. Okay, now I said that was the scary part. This is actually scaring me even more. The top 25 penalties imposed by HMRC averaged an eye-watering £11,000 each. I mean, it kind of scares you to use a lifetime ISA in the first place. I mean, it's a little bit ridiculous. Okay, I do understand that if you're in the privileged position to be buying a property of over £450,000, then maybe you shouldn't be complaining. But what's essentially happened here is the government have offered people a tool to help save towards a first-time property. And it's an incredible tool if you're able to keep within the rules, okay? An extra 25% given to you. Amazing. I think that the government are absolutely brilliant for creating that initiative. But why should savers be penalised? Because down the road, when they actually go to use that for a first-time property, they're like, oh, wait, I'm over that £450,000 threshold. A few weeks ago, we were taking a look at the average age of first-time buyers in this country. 36 years old now, okay? So you can imagine someone 18 years old, they hear about a lifetime ISA, they start putting away £4,000 a year, thinking a £450,000 property is like a dream come true. That's like a, you know, maybe a one or a two-bed place in London, or obviously if you're outside of London, it can go a lot further. And then you get a few years down the line, you realise you're not in a position to buy. And you're like, that's fine, I can carry on renting and I'm going to keep on saving towards my lifetime ISA. And you know, the lifetime ISA saving just becomes a habit. It becomes part of your everyday, right? Every single year that 4,000 goes in, you get your 1,000 bonus. Before you get it, you're in your mid-30s. You've realised that you're now ready to buy a property. It's now likely that you've probably got a family where you're going to be looking for a slightly larger property. If you live in London or down in the south, and I know, boohoo, oh, you live in London, down the south, these are problems. These are still serious problems and money is obviously still a very, very, you know, I can't think of the right word, but sensitive topic at the moment. And all of a sudden you go to use that money and they're like, you can't use it. Your property's now over £450,000 and you owe us over 11 grand of that money. That could be the difference between, you know, buying that first time property or not having enough of the deposit full stop. So what I'm saying and why I'm so passionate about this is, why can't the government just scrap that penalty? Just take back what you gave the person. Take back that £1,000 if that's what they took from you or whatever bonus they got, the 25% that you gave them, but nothing less. On that note, we do have a budget coming up at the end of the month. And whilst I am not too positive or too optimistic about the chance of anything that's changing. I know there are a number of providers, Plum obviously being one of them, I know Moneybox are another, that are constantly advocating the Chancellor to scrap these penalties. Or, at the very least, on the other side, to raise the bar of what the first-time property can cost. Because, you know, that £450,000 was set some time ago. I don't know the exact year, but you're definitely looking at over 5 years ago when that threshold was set, okay? At least they're trying to push people to be able to buy properties up to £600,000 with it. And of course, now, if they move it up to £600,000, I think that's a great first step. But ultimately, I just think they need to scrap the bonus. If they don't want to push the property price up, just scrap the penalty. So yeah, I think that the Lifetime ISA needs an update. It was an incredible product when it came out, but I just don't think it's so relevant. So yeah, that's me, and I'm going to have to face that penalty pretty soon, but hey ho. It is what it is. At least it's not £11,000. I think in my case, I'm going to have to give back £750. I mean, it's a crazy amount of money. That's a crazy amount of money to just have to pay as a penalty because I saved the way the government asked me to save in the first place. I did want to discuss some other news stories with you, but obviously you can see I absolutely got sidetracked by that and went in on the Lifetime ISAs. I hope someone from the government's listening and they've heard my plea and they've heard Martin Lewis's plea and they've heard Moneybox's plea and they've heard Plum's plea. I mean, if all of these people within the personal finance world are saying something, then surely we're onto the right thing here. All we're just asking is literally for them to do the right thing. Anyway, what else is going on in the news? I should probably take a breather. Well, Starling Bank were fined £40 million, but they've been let off and only have to pay £30 million. Because apparently they ain't screening people safely. The UK regulator has said that they were in breach of it being too easy for criminals to use their platforms. And not just that, they were giving accounts and letting high-risk people open accounts far too easily. And there's a fine. Should you withdraw your money from Starling Bank? I don't actually think this is anything to worry about for them. £30 million, probably not too big of a deal. And they're only being charged £30 million instead of £40 million because they promised to fix it. So I think you should be good there. And in other news, Mark Zuckerberg has become number two on the rich list. That's pretty cool. Just behind Elon Musk. I say just behind, about $50 billion behind. But he's just overtaken Jeff Bezos to become number two. Which I think is pretty cool. You got Elon, Mark, Jeff. That's right, we are on first name basis. If any of you are listening and you want to discuss your position in the rich list, feel free to DM us on at That Money Show and come jump on Mark Zuckerberg. We would absolutely love to chat to you here on the show. Cool. So there's the news. Pretty much Lifetime ISAs. And a few other bits on the side. Anyway, stick around. I'm going to take a breather. I'm going to have a glass of water to calm me down. But if the word Lifetime ISA comes up at all again on this show, I'm going to absolutely, what's it called? Like flip a screw? There's a saying with a screw and there's a saying with the word flip. I'll put them together and I'll ask my producer what the actual saying is I'm trying to come up with there is. What was I actually trying to say? Stick around because after this break, I'm going to be joined by Andy Donald, the Communications Director at UK Finance.
Fubar Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen?
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like they see like the gym and the muscles and the tattoos and they think I'm going to be like this, like serious, like fuck boy, like laugh. You know what I mean? And then they meet me. And I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yeah.
The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It's the sound of your mates alive. Is getting to more gigs this year and the next. It's the sound of saying, I got you, mate. It's the sound of mates enjoying even more of this. It's the sound of mates getting home instead of here. Click your seatbelt because you're twice as likely to be killed or seriously injured if you don't think.
When you notice something wrong, it tends to grow and eventually take over. to the point you can't really think of anything else. If something in your body doesn't feel right, the thought it could be cancer can play on your mind. Tests could put your mind at rest. Finding out sooner is always better. Your NHS wants to see you. Contact your GP practice.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so, tell us a little bit more.
You
no,
go there?
Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. So there's been some stuff happening in the news where banks are being given a little bit more power to pause payments, now for up to 4 days, to give them more time to investigate fraud. So at the moment, the current procedure is that they will have to decline or accept them by the end of the next business day, but this new law coming in will allow an extension of up to 3 more days, which is a very interesting thing that they're going to have the power to do. And I'm going to have a little chat with a guest about it. So actually joining me right now is Andy Donald, the Communications Director at UK Finance. Andy, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I am absolutely great. Really, really nice to have you on the show. So I'd love to just kind of kick off, throw you in the deep end and ask you straight away, what are your thoughts on this legislation? Good, bad? Too much power to the banks?
Definitely good. I think it's a tool in the fight against fraud. What it allows banks to do is look at a small number of payments that might be suspicious and just gives people a bit more time. They can get in touch with someone. They can get in touch with a customer, just talk to them, try and work out, are they being tricked into making this payment? And actually, this could be it's an important tool potentially in the fight against fraud. But it's important to say it's not going to happen to lots of payments. This is going to be a small number of payments. It's not about stopping legitimate payments going through. It's about tackling fraud.
Absolutely. Obviously, fraud has been on the rise, if anything, in terms of the way that fraudsters are becoming smarter, using different tactics, using various methods. With the rise of social media, especially, people are becoming more vulnerable. And I think, like you've just mentioned, the biggest worry when they see these kind of legislations come in, obviously they want fraud to be denied, they want fraud to be getting through, but for the average person, they're concerned that maybe this will affect them in them just, you know, going about their everyday trying to make normal bank transfers, and all of a sudden money's being held for up to 4 days, and they're like, I need some more rapid movement with my money. So like you mentioned, do you think this is going to affect, you know, a few people? Are there going to be a few case studies popping up of people having their money held for suspected fraudulent activity when really they were just, you know, transferring their mates?
Well, so if you're making small payments, payments that are normal, not out of the blue, not unexpected, there's no reason why they should be delayed. It is about, as I say, big payments that might be just coming out of the blue. Give me a bit more time to look at them. I think probably the message to get across is sometimes it is better to be safe than sorry.
I think that's a very, very good message indeed. I mean, one case that comes to mind, because I'm kind of in this stage of life personally myself, is, you know, when you go to buy a property, for example, sometimes you need that money to move very quickly. Like, you know, you complete or you exchange on a certain day, money needs to be moved, large amounts, suspicious. Could that be affected as part of this new legislation?
There's no reason for that to be, as I say, because that's often involving solicitors' accounts. That could be seen. That's a sort of normal process of transactions. Although, sadly, we do know that criminals target conveyancing firms. What they try to do, and they've seen examples of this, is contact the customer and say that the bank details have changed in the process of buying of completing the property transaction. That isn't the case. That's them saying, trying to send money to a false account, account controlled by criminals. So they say, this isn't about targeting legitimate payments or anything to do with house purchase transactions. It's really about stamping down on fraud, which is it's a very pernicious and sadly very prevalent crime.
Absolutely. And we've actually seen a few things coming through regarding fraud over the past week or so. There was a second legislation that came through about compensation for fraud, and how banks used to kind of have their own jurisdiction and take a look at each individual case and have a look to see if, you know, was the customer basically at fault for, you know, fraud and APP and all that kind of stuff. But now we're getting that to kind of come under the FSCS umbrella in a way. I know it's not FSCS, it's its own individual thing, but this £85,000 compensation. I'd love to hear your immediate reaction to that new legislation, which is, I believe, coming into effect. Is it this week?
It's coming into effect today, actually. Voila. It's a new set of rules from a regulator called the Payment Systems Regulator. They brought them in today. And previously, as you said, there was a voluntary code which the banks operated and under which about 60% of what we call authorised push payment losses were reimbursed. This supersedes that. New rules across all banks and payment firms, whereby if you unfortunately fall victim and you lose anything up to £85,000, that's a mandatory limit that would be reimbursed. Again, banks can reimburse more than £85,000 if people do lose more than that. But what this does is it puts a more consistent picture across the industry compared to the previous approach. And hopefully that provides a bit of reassurance if someone does unfortunately fall victim to this crime.
Again, sounds like therefore strong legislation is being put through. Two things to, again, protect the consumer. This isn't, by the way, that £85,000 compensation isn't like a freedom to someone to think, oh, I'm fine now, I don't have to even worry about fraud in the first place, because you're still, at some extent, it's important to, you know, stay on top of this yourself and stay aware, don't let yourself become vulnerable. But do you have any advice for individuals to just generally stay aware, avoid scams in general, and be more cognizant of the ways that people are trying to target them?
So you're right, people are trying to target you. It is unfortunately very common. It's easy to think it's not going to happen to you, but it could. It's one of the most common crimes in this country. The key thing is being suspicious of requests for either personal information, financial information, or even a transfer of money that comes out of the blue you're not expecting. Only a criminal is going to try and rush you. We've got a campaign called Take Five to Stop Fraud, and the key message from it is just about taking that time, stopping, thinking, could this be a fraud? Am I trying to be deceived here? Often these frauds unfortunately start on social media via text messages, telecommunications. So just being wary of unexpected text messages, unexpected emails, unexpected phone calls. It's absolutely fine to say no, to hang up, to not respond. It could save you a lot of time and money.
I think that overall is great advice. And I like to tell people, just be traditionally British. A British person is naturally suspicious of things. And that's unfortunately how you do have to be in this environment, because it's better to be safe than sorry, like you said.
It is actually, it's interesting. We did some research, I think it was last year, where we found another British trait is being too polite at times. Often we're too inclined to say yes to things, not wanting to be rude to someone on the phone, and criminals can prey on that. So you do at times need to sort of take the British trait out of you. You can be rude, you can say no, you can hang up the phone. Your bank, if it's genuine, they're not going to mind you doing that and you calling them back again the next day and sorting things out. But it could stop a criminal targeting you.
Yeah, absolutely. And what you were saying about people being rushed, I think in every scenario where a friend or a family member or someone that's heard of a scam that someone's fallen prey to, in every single time that's been recited to me, there's been an element of speed involved. You know, someone was rushing into a meeting and all of a sudden they were being hacked, or their bank was XYZ was happening and they had to do something right here, right now. And like you said, that's the vulnerability where you think you have to make that immediate movement. Whereas if it was a bank and, you know, they were the actual ones trying to contact you, they would never force you to do something within a very specific time frame. Ultimately, if they've made you aware, like, they'll talk you through it. If you can't do it in that moment, they'll understand. And I think that that's a really, really important, I suppose, aspect of scams for people to be aware of. And the other one, like you mentioned, about hanging up on the phone, I suppose, in a way, your bank or that customer service will applaud you for being naturally suspicious. If they're calling you and you're like, you know what, I've, for some reason, I don't have a good feeling about this call. Firstly, that's a lesson for the customer service from bank to understand their tone of voice and the way that they're reaching out to customers. But secondly, they'll applaud you for being vigilant, for hanging up on them and calling back on the number that you know is safe in the first place. So I'm fairly certain those are two really strong ones. Is there anything else that you've noticed as quite a strong character trait of scams and fraud that keeps coming up in a lot of cases?
It's just where it begins. Just so much of it starts online or via telecommunications. And that's really where I think they've got to take a lot stronger role in clamping down on fraud, whether that's suspicious text messages, whether that's fake adverts on marketplace sites for goods that don't exist. There's a whole range of them. And they've got to take a much stronger line, much stronger role in cracking down on this activity.
Absolutely. So let's move to the next stage then. If someone suspects that they have now been scammed, they're concerned, they've fallen prey to something, and they've maybe taken the action, but they are now with second thoughts thinking something's wrong, or potentially the other way around, they're about to do that transfer, you know, fall victim to the final stage of the scam, and they just know there's something wrong. What immediate steps can they take at that point?
Well, the immediate step, if you haven't made the payment, would be just not to make the payment, to stop, to back out of it, whether you're online, on the phone, on your app. Just don't make the money. Don't make the payment. Don't send that money away to a criminal. If you do ultimately send money and realize you have fallen victim to fraud, the most important thing you can do is just contact your bank as quickly as possible, let them know what's happened, explain the circumstances, and they're there to help you to try and put things right.
I think that's really good. The person at the other end of the line, if you are reaching out to, like you said, your bank or whatever other service you've been scammed through or you believe you've been scammed through, don't be embarrassed. Don't take time. Don't start complaining to friends, family. Take action and speak to the people that can actually make the decision. At the end of the day, you're going to be in a much stronger position if you come kind of, I feel like the word come clean, but it's not coming clean, right? You've been tricked. You've fallen prey to a crime. So by opening up to that person, that bank, that society, whatever it is, and admitting it to them, that's actually the preferential route rather than being embarrassed and trying to, you know, hide the fact that something's gone wrong. Because ultimately, it's your money. And if you want it back, you need to take action. You can't just rely, even though they are taking steps, and this is kind of going to be my follow-up question, you can't just rely on the bank to cover every single one. Because if the bank stopped every single scam, scams wouldn't happen anymore, right? And if every single scam was prevented. So what are the efforts being made then by the authorities, by the banks, by the government to really try and tackle fraud? Because like you said, with social media, it is just, I feel like everyone knows someone that's been a victim to fraud.
You're right. And the government's done a lot of things. Last year, they put in place a new fraud strategy. They are investing increased amounts of money in the police service. Interestingly, the banking industry funds its own police unit called the Dedicated Card and Payment Crime Unit, which actually investigates, targets the criminals responsible and tries to bring them to justice. There are various initiatives in place by technology companies, by telecommunications companies, just trying to put some more prevention in place. Another important thing you can do is sharing intelligence information between different sectors. It's kind of like a jigsaw. You're putting it all together, and not one sector has all the information. So there is a collaborative effort needed to try and actually work together, find all the bits of information and stop it. We probably won't actually be able to stop it completely, but we can definitely take steps to prevent it and slow it from happening.
Brilliant. Just before I leave you, is there anything else you'd like to share, either a warning to the individual or a plea to the services in terms of helping us kind of combat this problem?
I think the biggest thing is just being suspicious and taking care. If, as I say, if requests for information or your money come out of the blue, one of the most common ones is being called and told your money is at risk and you need to transfer your money into a safe account. Your bank will never ask you to do that. That is definitely a scam. And if that happens to you, you should hang up the phone, not respond to the email, and just walk away from that.
Brilliant. Well, Andy, thank you so much for your time. And hopefully, there's a few less scams that are going to happen thanks to this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. Well, there you go. That was Andy from UK Finance helping us try and combat scams and fraud, etc. Remember, stay vigilant, people. I want to give you Money Tip of the Week. You probably got quite a lot of tips just there and then from Andy himself, helping you prevent yourself from scams. But this one is actually quite time relevant. I'm not trying to scam you myself. I know we just said that anything time sensitive tends to be one. But in this case, I mean, you can trust me. And if you don't, then just don't do what I say. But energy bills. As of last week, they have gone up. The energy price cap has gone up, meaning that most people on flexible tariffs are now paying a higher price. They went up by about 10%. This was roughly 6 days ago. This happened at the beginning of the month. So why am I telling you this? And what can you do? Number one is measure and report your energy level now, your gas level, your electricity level. Take the measurements and submit them. Why am I asking you to do this? Well, you will be charged. Well, not necessarily you will be, but there's a high chance that if you have to report your own energy bills on a monthly basis and you haven't done this since the change or just before the change, you might be charged at the new higher rate for energy that you were actually using at the lower rate. So if you can just measure it as quickly as you can and get it sent off to them so that you aren't charged further forward in time at the higher rate, just a really good one. You should have actually done this just before and just after or just around the time that the actual energy rise happened. But that's just a quick tip. Nice, quick, to the point. If you have to do that and you don't have a smart meter, go and do that right now. It's worth mentioning, by the way, that if you are someone that's struggling with this rise in energy, it is worth reaching out to your specific energy firm, your energy provider, making them aware that you are vulnerable or are struggling with the price of energy and to see what can be done. I heard of a case the other day where someone was able to actually get rid and remove their next three payments because of the way that they're struggling. You can also look to be put on the priority services register if you are vulnerable. That is the priority services register. So that's your call. Go measure your energy, people. Anyway, catch you after the break where I'm going to be joined by Laura Schmidt, the founder of Love & Do.
Fubar Radio.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Three words to describe yourself.
Weird, funny, and quirky. I'm a strange guy.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Not many men would say that. Normally they're like, yeah, strong.
No, you know what? That's what people think I'm going to be. Like, they see, like, the gym and the muscles and the tattoos, and they think I'm going to be, like, this, like, serious, like, fuckboy, like, lad. You know what I mean? And then they meet me, and I'm like a Jim Carrey. I'm like a muscly Jim Carrey.
You're listening to Fubar Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yeah. The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
What's going on in the DMs? Are you getting naughty pictures from fans? Girls, are you getting the odd little pic? I bet they're popping the DMs.
Yeah, the DMs are doing all right. I've got a lot of cousins, big family, so they're all touching base.
Yeah.
There's a few girls in there as well. I've had some fruity videos come through.
Oh, so tell us a little bit more. Yeah, we're going there. Access all areas, mate.
Politics Uncensored.
I felt like it was a little bit, they wanted to go viral. They wanted the clip to end up on socials and be able to go viral, and there was nothing substantive on it. So to be honest, it kind of pissed me off because I thought it was a throwaway comment made for social media as opposed to actually giving voters information they need when they enter the voting booth.
Totally agree. And I also found the whole, I think he said something about Keir Starmer's strings being pulled by senior members of the Labour Party. I found that slightly conspiratorial.
That Money Show on FUBAR Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, that money guy. And I've now got a really interesting guest to join me on the show. Laura Schmidt is the founder of Love & Do and the GBEA Young Entrepreneur of the Year 2023. Laura, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very, very well. And I'm really excited to hear this, to have this interview, because I love speaking to young entrepreneurs, people that have kind of, you know, just tried something, taken a bit of a risk. And obviously now you kind of see the fruits of it, right? You see the strong side of the business that's grown. But often people are only starting at this point. They're only catching up with you now, and they haven't seen the years and years and years of torment and stress that it takes to set up a business. And I think that these are really important conversations to have, to kind of like dive into, you know, who you are and your foundations and what made you start this. But I'd love for you to start by sharing a little bit about Love & Do. I'm really hoping that I'm pronouncing that the right way, and you're absolutely happy to embarrass me if I haven't been saying it, and just to understand its backstory.
Yeah, there's not actually a proper way to pronounce it. It's just a made-up word, so it gets pronounced all sort of ways, and I never correct anyone because even I pronounce it differently every single time. So Love & Do, we sell journals and planners specifically for mental health, wellness, confidence. I started the business 4 years ago when my own mental health was really struggling. Obviously, during lockdown, I think everyone found it a big adjustment and change. I've always struggled with mental health issues since I was a child. And I found that during lockdown, journaling was something that really helped me, not only in terms of my mental health, but like my productivity. So I found that it was a useful tool. I've got a background in psychology and a master's in mental health. So I used all that education and created my own journals and just started selling them. And it's just been a wild journey ever since.
Okay, you make it sound a little bit too easy. Just started selling them and it's been a wild journey ever since. I've got written down here that you started it with just £10. I mean, is that true? Because obviously you're selling a physical product and that requires money to make and then to sell, and you're taking on risk to buy product to sell it. So how did you start a business with so little?
So I essentially didn't know whether it would work. I always knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur and start my own business, but I essentially just bought two samples of the products. So I decided that my business model was going to be print to order. I found somewhere that I could get these printed and I could order in very low quantities. So if I only got one order, I could get one printed. So the reason why I spent £10 is I ordered one of each product and got photography with those and just didn't invest anything else. And then as soon as the money started coming in, that's when I decided to go to a bigger manufacturer and order in high quantities. So that's essentially how I started with £10. I used Etsy, so I didn't have to invest in a website or any software. I kept the cost really low, especially for the first month. But obviously, I started getting sales straight away, so all that money just got reinvested.
That's, I think, a really important lesson for people to hear, because often one of the biggest kind of hurdles is people think they don't have enough capital to start a business in the first place. You've just squashed any kind of idea around that, especially that you're selling a physical product. A lot of people are trying to create businesses around physical products and they're like, oh, I need money to pay someone to make my logo or to build my website and all this kind of stuff. And you've literally built a business around a physical product that requires, you know, cost and upfront and all that kind of stuff, and done it with a tenner. So, okay, myth squash. You don't need money to start a business. Sorry to all of you listening out there. I suppose still at the early stages, managing the finances, the cash flow, the variability from month to month and all that kind of stuff must have been quite difficult, and a lot of lessons might have been learned the hard way. How did you go about managing, I suppose, the money side of the business at the start?
It was really difficult. I think it was just a massive learning curve for me. I didn't know anything. VAT, taxes, corporation tax, it was just all completely new. It was just a lot of research, a lot of mistakes being made. I think if I could give any advice about anyone starting a business, is find a really good accountant who will be patient with you and explain these things to you.
Agreed.
But yeah, I think it's just about allowing yourself to make mistakes and just learning and trialing and errors and all that good stuff.
Yeah, no, I agree. Don't be put off by kind of the Goliath of what finances seem. Firstly, like you said, if you are at a point where this is becoming a proper business, it's probably right to outsource that responsibility onto a professional that can do it for you.
Yeah.
Rather than you having to study the tax laws and all this kind of stuff and trying to save yourself a bit of money. Often, yeah. Sometimes spending money makes money. And in the case of an accountant, I can vouch that the amount of time I would have had to have put in to learn everything about, you know, how to do my own books, etc. I would much rather have focused and spent that time on the business itself. I kind of want to switch lanes for a second, still on finance, because this is that money show and we kind of got to keep it money related. But over my years of being basically a financial educator, I've seen this incredible link between mental health and money. As they are literally, if you think of a Venn diagram, they couldn't be more overlapping if you tried. Because everyone thinks that money is mathematical. It's not. It's hugely emotional.
Yeah.
Have you found any benefit from the journals that you provide? Do any of them focus specifically on finances or incorporate finance as part of them? And if not, how have you used potentially journaling to help you with your own money?
So yes, in terms of the planners, we do have financial sections in them. So they have monthly budget sections in our life planners. I definitely wanted to incorporate it because it was highly requested. I think everyone has not the same issues, but the same struggles with money, making sure that they are saving as much and making their money go further. In terms of journaling for my mental health towards money, I would suggest that, yeah, I think my relationship with money, especially since starting a business, has changed so much. And it's journaling has helped me become self-aware in terms of my relationship to money. I think before starting my business, spending £100 on something was too much. But now £100 in my business is nothing. It's really weird. I can't explain it in terms of business money. Is different to personal money. If I spent £10,000 on my business, it's like, okay, just spend it. But if I spent £10,000 on personal, it'd be like, whoa.
No, I mean, that makes complete sense, because ultimately I think every time you spend money on your business, your assumption is it's growing the business, yeah. Right?
Yeah. I think it's the stress as well with, I think journaling has really helped me. The stress of having to deal with so much money and those bigger quantities of money that I've never really dealt with before. It is very stressful and it can be really overwhelming, especially when you've got people to pay and bills to pay and a warehouse to keep up and running. I think dealing with the stress has been difficult, and journaling has really helped me feel less overwhelmed.
Yeah, I feel like that must have been a crazy leap going from, you know, managing your own personal finances to having to manage the finances of a large, successful business that, like you said, that now incorporates a warehouse as well, which is incredible. And it kind of just shows the strength of your business and how well it's come. But I'm sure it hasn't come without its challenges as well. Are there any, I guess, financial challenges that you recall throughout your journey of growing this business, like those really big ones that you remember? Because you did have to overcome them. Maybe it's to do with, you know, moving into another property and actually having to start pay for not just the business now, but for actually the place that houses the business. Or anything else that comes to mind that people can take a lesson from.
I think the biggest difficulty was in 2023, my business just kind of blew up. And I found that all of a sudden, within a year, I had a team of four, I had a warehouse, I hit the VAT threshold, so I had to take that into account. And my overheads just kind of skyrocketed. Before, I was just me in my conservatory and paying myself peanuts. So I had pretty much no overheads. I was pure profit, except for the cost of goods. But then all of a sudden, within a year, I had these huge overheads. I think I wasn't as prepared for that. I think it's really important if you do have a business and you are thinking about investing into some big overhead that you are prepared for that and how you can factor that into your cash flow and your cash management. I think also a big decision and mistake I've made is stock management. I think investing in large quantities of stock is very overwhelming. I mean, I'm pretty much putting like a small house deposit every time I do a stock order, and it's scary. And I've made mistakes in terms of ordering too much of one product and not enough of another, and then having to sit on that product, which definitely affects cash flow. It means that I have cash just sitting in boxes in my warehouse. And that's a lesson that I'm still learning and probably won't learn and really be educated in it for a while, because I've made mistakes in the past. But again, it's just mistakes are going to be made with money. You're going to end up wasting money. I think it's inevitable, especially if you're new to business. So it's about just learning from it as quickly as possible and trying not to make the same mistakes.
I think you said something really important there, which was just learning from it. You can make a mistake. A mistake is absolutely fine. What's not fine is if you haven't learned anything from every mistake that you make, because it's the repetitive ones that are going to be the ones that are going to be the biggest detriment to your business in the first place, right?
Yeah.
You can make it once. That's fine. Anyone can make a mistake if you didn't know what the answer was in the first place, but learn from them. And don't be afraid to make those mistakes, right? Because otherwise, that's probably where some of your biggest growth moments have come from. You made that mistake, you're like, that ain't happening again. And all of a sudden, your business has kind of like flourished off the back of that. Before I do leave you, I would love to kind of just get your kind of one piece, or like one piece to camera, or one piece to the person listening about becoming an entrepreneur, you know, starting your own business, following your passion, to someone that's maybe on the cusp of wanting to do it, but they're not too sure. And it could be as simple as, do you have any regrets from doing what you've done?
No, I wish I started earlier. I wish I wasn't afraid of what people thought or failing. I wish I just had the confidence just to do it even earlier and just go for it. I think it's hard when you might have certain restraints in terms of time, money, or you might be just afraid of what people will think. I think if you really want it, there are ways that you can do it, and it's just about finding those ways.
I love it. There's no better note to end this interview. So, Laura, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with continuing to grow the business.
Thank you very much.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks.
Well, there you go. That was Laura, the founder of Love and Do. I'm going to spell it for you because I actually forgot to ask her just then to shout out. So that's L-O-V-E, the word love, N-D-U. Love, the letter N, and then D-U. Go check them out on socials. Go if you are interested in journaling or anything along those lines, or mental health, etc. Go and buy one, because I think I might go and get one after this show myself, because they sound like a really great idea. Very topical right now. It's time for Scam of the Week. If you were listening about 20 minutes ago, I had a chat with Andy from UK Finance all about how to make yourself as secure as possible from scams. And Scam of the Week is a segment in our show where we try and warn you of one specific one. And it's, in this case, romance scams are on the rise, you know, when people try to infiltrate your emotions to try and make you pay them money and they're not actually who they say they are. Yeah, those things actually happen thanks to social media. Yay. And how bad is it? Well, Santander have reported over £4 million worth of scams in the past 6 months, which is 27% increase on the 6 month period before that. Could this affect you? Are you too smart? Are you not young enough to fall for that? Or, you know, you're not too old, so you know how social media works and you wouldn't fall for that? Well, apparently their victims have ranged between the ages of 18 and 93. So you are vulnerable. Every single person is vulnerable, with the average loss per Santander UK customer being around £4,500. These are crazy numbers. So what are we going to do to stop them? Number one, you're going to look out for you're going to look out for all of these things. Number one, too much too soon, okay? Are they asking you for too much money too quickly? It's a scam. Avoiding face-to-face meetings, if they are doing that, potentially a scam. Strange or vague background details about themselves, again, could be a scam. If they are asking you for financial help, full stop, and you've never met the person and you only speak to them through social media, probably a scam. And it's suspicious images. They're using images that look like they could have been taken from Google or a stock photo. You can do reverse searches, I think it might be called, on Google. So have a quick look at that, okay? And remember, stay suspicious, people. Stay suspicious. Not always in life. That's probably a really bad motto. But when it comes to fraud, stay suspicious. Every single week, I end the show by answering your questions. The questions that you have DM'd us on at That Money Show on Instagram, at That Money Show. So simple. You DM us a question, we answer your questions on air, and we can do it anonymously or not, obviously, depending on what you would like us to do. But in this case, Polly has asked, I'm new to investing and I keep seeing lots of adverts around crypto. I don't really understand it. Is it worth investing in or is it a scam? Okay, adverts for crypto. Where are you finding adverts for crypto? Maybe the crypto platforms themselves. Interesting. Polly, crypto isn't a scam, but crypto has a lot of scams within it. The same way that banks aren't scams, but you can still get scammed through a bank. Does that make sense? Crypto is a much more unregulated service, which means that it's a lot more susceptible to scams. But at the same time, there's opportunities there. It's a financial asset. It's a product and one that you can diversify your savings, your income into. So if you are new to investing, crypto might not be the thing that you want to look at first. There are much more safer, secure things for you to learn about first before diving into the world of crypto, which is very, very volatile. You've seen some crazy returns. You've seen some crazy losses. Basically, volatile means that one day it could shoot up 10%, 20%, sometimes even more than that, the value of what you've got saved. The next day, it can completely crash and go to zero on some of the various crypto assets within the world of crypto. So if you are completely new to investing, I would urge you to focus on the basics of finance first to understand how to build an emergency fund, the world of investing, how to look to invest in things like stocks and shares and funds and ETFs. And if all of those words are troubling you, I would urge you to dive into that rabbit hole first before starting to look into crypto. Now, I'm not saying crypto is a bad thing at all. No, I'm not saying that at all. There's definitely a place for it in some people's portfolios for a small percentage because I always advocate for diversification. So I won't tell people to only buy crypto or only buy stocks and shares or only invest in property. I'll tell people to buy the right to build the right portfolio that spreads across all of those. So the answer is it's not a scam, but I would definitely be more vigilant around the crypto industry than around, I suppose, general investing industry. But like I said earlier, when it comes to fraud, be suspicious of everything. Naveen has asked, can you please explain what ATOL protected means? I've just booked an expensive holiday and the website mentioned it was ATOL protected. I feel like you hear that in an advert, right? ATOL protected, but I wasn't quite sure what this meant. Do you know what? I'm actually not too sure about this. I wish I knew what this acronym stands for. It's definitely like airport, transfer. I'm not even going to try and pretend like I know what it's for. And I will come back to you in next week's show. So Naveen, that's a guaranteed listener for next week. Thank you for coming back. But I'm fairly certain that air traffic in general or air travel has a lot of regulations and rules around it. So ATOL protected is probably like you're compensated where if your flight was cancelled or if you're delayed, you have the availability of the compensation schemes and all that kind of stuff. So it's just another type of insurance, etc. when it comes to air travel. The specificity of it, I wish I could answer for you here today, but I will hold back something to make sure that you come back next week in particular. We do also have a live stream, by the way, guys, so if anyone is listening and does have any questions when it comes to money in general, I can always answer them on the live that we do every single week. So someone who is on the live stream has asked me, what is dropshipping? Straight to the point. I absolutely love that. A nice, simple question. Okay. So dropshipping, or you might have heard the term Amazon FBA, is quite a popular thing. It probably went to its height of popularity around the kind of COVID lockdown period. But it's essentially where you kind of never really own the product yourself. So dropshipping could be, you know, there's a supplier somewhere in the world and someone will order through your website, your order goes directly to that supplier, your supplier will then send the product directly to the customer. Do you see how that works? You're basically a middleman where the order comes in through you, you then pass that order onto a supplier and the supplier will deliver it straight to the customer. So you never have to kind of buy up in bulk a specific product. There are other versions of it where people do actually go out and literally buy up a product on the cheap and then try and sell them. But generally, that is dropshipping to a T. It's just a business. So look up Amazon FBA and stuff like that because that's a way to go about it. And one final question quickly. You don't really have time, but I'm going to answer anyway. What are your thoughts on trading? I am personally not a fan. I look like long-term investing. Trading is done by professionals. It's done by robots. Most people do unfortunately lose money from the idea of trading. A lot of people try and sell you the dream, but if they're trying to teach it to you, then sometimes I question, shouldn't they just be doing what they're trying to teach you themselves and making all the money that way? Generally, my thought on trading, I'm much more, if you are interested in long-term wealth and building wealth, investing for me is the better alternative. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to That Money Show. We had Andy and Laura on, so really thank you for their time. And remember, you can listen back to us on any platform that you get a podcast on, or if you download the FUBAR Radio app, we are at, you can find the show live there, and also at That Money Show on all socials. Anyway, I have been That Money Guy. This has been That Money Show. And as promised at the start of the show, congratulations, you are now officially better with your money.